"What's the matter? What's the matter?" said Bilious. He took Susan by the shoulders. They felt bony under his hands. "Damn," said Susan. She steadied herself and managed to get her own voice back. "He's slipping out of character. I can feel him doing it, and that drags me in. I remember things that haven't happened yet, and I talk that talk and stalk that stalk, and if he does get sidetracked, then I'll have to do it. But what's he doing it all for? What's happened to the real Hogfather?"
"Search me," said the O-God.
"But look, I, think I do remember something just before I, incarnated, but it sounds stupid."
"Well?"
"Teeth."
Susan hesitated.
"Teeth," she said flatly. "Lots of little teeth, almost sad."
"How did you know?"
"Maybe I remember you telling me before you told me. How about a big shiny red globe?"
"No, can't help you there, I'm afraid. It's just teeth. Rows and rows of teeth."
"I don't remember rows. I just felt teeth were important."
"Ah! It's amazing what you can do with a beak,"
said the raven, who'd been investigating the laden table and had succeeded in levering a lid off a jar.
"What have you got there?" said Susan wearily.
"Eyeballs."
"They're olives."
"Tough. They're mine now."
"They're a kind of fruit."
"Or vegetable."
"You sure?"
"They're green, you stupid bird."
"They could be very old eyeballs." "Squeak! And not so much of the stupid, madam." "Squeak!"
said the death of rats again. They turned. It was pointing at its grey teeth.
"The tooth fairy?"
"What about her?"
"What's the tooth fairy?" said the O-God.
"It's a sort of franchise operation. You get the ladder, the money belt and the pliers, and you're set up."
"Pliers?"
"If she can't make change, she takes an extra tooth on account. But the tooth fairies are harmless enough. They're just working girls. They don't menace anyone. They collect teeth."
"Yes.
Where do they take them?"
"I don't know. What sort of question's that?"
"Just wondered."
Susan looked at the death of rats.
"Actually, where do they take the teeth?"
"Squeak! He says search him,"
said the raven. It pecked at another jar.
"How about these? Nice and wrinkly..."
"Pickled walnuts. But what do they do with the teeth? What harm can a tooth fairy do?"
The runners of the sleigh hit a roof near the university and the pigs trotted to a halt. A corpse lay in the snow. Death looked at the hourglass again.
"Odd. It's a size job, then. You won't be wanting the false beard."
Albert squinted up at the sky.
"There's nowhere to fall from and no footprints in the snow. So where did he come from?"
It was clear that the man had only just died.
"Nasty knife wound there, see?"
"It's not good," agreed the spirit of the man, looking down at himself. Then he stared from himself to Albert to Death, and his phantom expression went from shock to concern.
"They got teeth, all of them. They just walked in and..."
Death swung his scythe.
"No, wait!"
He faded and was gone.
"Well, what was that all about?"
"I have my suspicions."
"See that badge on his shirt? Looks like a tooth."
"Yes, it does."
"Where's that come from?"
"A place I cannot go."
Beers never closed, and no one could ever remember not seeing Igor behind the bar. Just now, he was watching the window. Then someone tapped him on the shoulder. He spun around.
"Oh, it's you, miss. I didn't hear the door."
There hadn't been the door. Susan was in a hurry.
"Have you seen Violet lately?"
"The tooth girl. Not for a week or two."
"Where does she live?"
"Now, you know I never answer questions like that.
Where does she live, Igor?"
"Shamlegger Street, next to the picture framers." "Ah!
Igor's eyebrow knotted in anger as he realized what he'd said.
Now, miss, don't try your granddad's voice on me. I could burn you for that.
Sorry, it's important, said Susan as she hurried out.
Down there.
The reins were hauled so sharply the hogs ended up facing the other way.
What's up?
Death pointed downwards. An endless white snowfield lay below. Albert squinted.
Some old bugger trudging through the snow. Been gathering wood by the look of it. Look, master, I'm sure you've done enough now to make sure. Something's happening. Ho, ho, ho. Look, he's all right.
There was a brief wedge of light below as the wood-gatherer opened the door of a snow-drifted hovel.
See? There's a couple of blokes catching him up. They're weighed down with parcels and stuff. He's going to have a decent hog's watch after all. No problem there.
Death's glowing eye sockets took in the scene.
It's wrong.
The O-God hesitated. What do you mean you can't walk through the door? Said Susan. Whatever happened to Mr. Manners? Susan shrugged, walked through the cheap woodwork, and opened the door from the inside. Bilious stepped in and looked around. This is where the Tooth Fairy lives? It's a bit pokey. Ah, said Susan, rummaging through the paperwork on a small rickety table. She opened a small red notebook. This looks right. What's that? She gets given the names every week.
Of the children who are going to lose teeth?
Yes, look, here's Tula's tooth last month. She practically hammered it out because she needed the half dollar. Do you like children?
Not raw.
Hold on. She flicked some pages. Look, the last few days, all unticked, and this can't be right, can it? There were 5 names entered on the first unticked night. Read the names. William Whittles, a.k.a. Willie, home. Tosser, school. Sophie Langtry, a.k.a. Daddy's Princess. The Honourable Geoffrey Bibbleton, a.k.a. Trouble in Trousers, home. Four Eyes, school. Keep going. Nuhakme Iktar, the Laughing Falafel Takeaway, a.k.a. Little Jewel. Reginald Lillywhite, a.k.a. Banjo, the Nap Hill Lurker, have you seen this man? Does that sound to you like someone who'd expect a visit from a tooth fairy?
No, me neither.
He sounds like someone who'd expect a visit from the watch. Susan looked around. It really was a crummy room. Cheap narrow bed, crumbling plaster, tiny window. There was a knock at the door. Susan opened it. Outside was a small, bald man in a long brown coat holding a clipboard and blinking nervously.
I saw the light, see? I thought Violet was in.
He twiddled his pencil.
Only she's a bit behind with the teeth, and there's a bit of money owing, and Ernie's cart ain't come back, so I come round in case she was ill or something.
She's not here. The man gave Susan a worried look.
There's nearly $13 in pillow money, see? I'll have to report it.
Who to?
It has to go high up, and who's going to get the blame, I'll tell you, Charlie.
The man had a fringe of worried hair and a small worried moustache, suggesting that here was a man who, at the end of the world, would worry that it would be blamed on him. Do you employ the tooth fairies? Said Susan.
Sort of. Basically, I run bulk collection and dispatch.
Where to?
I just sees to it they gets on the cart, see? When Ernie's signed the GV-19 for him, that's it done and finished.
A whole cart for a handful of teeth?
Well, there's the food for the guards, and who are you, anyway?
Susan straightened up.
What cart, Charlie?
Comes Tuesdays.
And where does it go?
Dunno.
What's Violet's full name?
I said...
Violet Butler.
Thank you. What happens to the teeth? He blinked at her. You never wondered?
It's not my job, I just...
Yes, you said. Thank you. You've been Very helpful. The man turned and ran down the stairs. Drat, said Susan. Where are we going now? Said Bilious. Susan looked him up and down. Tell me, have you ever ridden a horse?
I don't know. What's a horse?
The old man in the hovel looked uncertainly at the feast spread in front of him.
I got a bit of a mess of beans cooking, he mumbled, looking at his visitors through filmy eyes.
Good heavens! You can't eat beans at Hogswatch, said the king. That's terribly unlucky, my word, yes. And we've brought you this magnificent spread. The turkey's hardly been touched. Still plenty of meat on it. And do have some of the cracking good widgeons stuffed with swan's liver.
It's very kind of you, gentlemen, only I've never been beholden to nobody.
Good heavens, man, it's Hogswatch! I was looking out of the window and I saw you plodding through the snow, and I said to young Germain here, who's that chappie? And he said, oh, some peasant fellow who lives by the forest. And I said, well, I couldn't eat another thing, and we just bundled everything up, and here we are.
And I expect you're pathetically thankful, said the page. I expect we've brought a ray of light into your dark tunnel of life, hm?
Her dad brought me up never to ask for...
Listen, I've walked miles tonight. This is some genuine Hogswatch charity, and we're going to sit here and watch the smile on your grubby but honest face. Is that understood?
And what do you say to the good king?
The peasant hung his head.
Thank you.
Right! Now, pick up your fork!
The door burst open. An indistinct figure strode into the room, snow swirling around it in a cloud.
What do you think you are doing, sire?
The king tried to focus. There was an impression of red and white, but black, too. He drew himself up as regally as he could.
This is some fine old Hogswatch charity.
No, it's not.
How dare you?
Were you here last month? Will you be here next week? No. But tonight you want to feel all warm inside. Tonight you want them to say what a good king he is.
The page started to draw his sword.
Stay still, sonny, said Albert, else you'll be just a paragraph.
All we've had from him is ingratitude, snapped the king.
Death leant forward.
Go away.
To the king's surprise, his body took over and marched him out of the door. Albert patted the page on the shoulder.
And you can run along too. I didn't mean to go upsetting anyone, mumbled the old man.
Half-eaten leavings, said Death. We can do better than this.
Albert grabbed his arm.
A bit of advice, master. Listen.
The old man was aware of whispering. He sat staring at nothing.
Well, if you are sure...
Death reached into the sack.
Happy Hogswatch, ho ho ho.
There was a string of sausages, a side of bacon, a tub of salt pork, black pudding, and a mass of chitterlings wrapped up in greased paper, and laid on the table with a soft thump.
A pig's head? A old one? Ain't had brawn in years, and pig's knuckles and a bowl of pork drippin'?
Ho, ho, ho.
Albert patted the old man on the back.
Have yourself a bowl. In fact, I have two. Now we ought to be going, master.
Wasn't that nice?
Said Death, as the hogs accelerated.
I feel I was cut out for this sort of thing, you know.
Really, master?
It's nice to do a job where people look forward to seeing you. They don't normally.
Oh.
I could get into the habit of this, in fact.
But you won't, will you, master? Because we'll get the Hogfather back. That's what you said we were going to do, right?
Of course.
But Albert's jittery ears didn't detect any enthusiasm.
I have always chosen the path of duty.
Good. The sleigh sped on.
Nevertheless.
Just on the edge of hearing, Albert thought he heard a voice whisper sadly,
"Ho, ho, ho."
Everyone, it is said, has a book inside them. In the Library of Death, everyone was inside a book, book on book, shelf on shelf, and in everyone, at the page of the ever-moving now, a scribble of handwriting following the narrative of every life.
"Butler Violet, this is her," said Susan.
"Everyone's in here?" said Bilious, as she thumbed through the pages.
"Yes.
Even gods? Anything that's alive and self-aware. This is odd. It looks as though she's in some sort of prison. Who'd want to lock up a tooth fairy? Someone with sensitive teeth? It's all hoods over her head and people carrying her, but it says the last job she did was on banjo, and yes, she got the tooth. And then she felt someone was behind her, and there's a ride on a cart, and the hoods come off."
Susan turned the page.
"She's in a tower, tall and white inside, but not outside. It didn't look real. There were apple trees around it, but the trees didn't look right. She must have got this wrong. It says here there was only blue sky above."
"Yeah, best place for the sky. The sky underneath you probably means trouble."
"She means no sky on the horizon."
"But you have to have sky on the horizon, I think. That's how you can tell it's the horizon."
A sense of familiarity was creeping up on Susan. "I've seen this place. But it isn't a proper landscape. Can we go after her?"
"She's alive, she's mortal, that means I can find her."
Susan turned and started to walk out of the library. "It could be dangerous. Would you be any good in a fight?"
"I could be sick on people."
Part of Ponder Stibbons was very, very impressed. In the past, when Hex had been recalcitrant about its calculations, Ponder had tried to sort things out calmly and logically. It had never occurred to him to hit Hex with a mallet, but this was what Ridcully was threatening to do. What was impressive was that Hex seemed to understand the concept.
"Right, let's have no more of this insufficient dates business. Hazard a guess."
The sound of Hex's quill as it scrabbled across the paper was like a frantic spider trapped in a matchbox.
"Plus, plus, plus, this is just calculating aloud, you understand. Plus, 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 fair enough. Plus, 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 the amount of belief in the world must be subject to an upper limit. Plus, plus, plus. Sounds sensible? Obviously there's a limit to what you can believe in. So what? Plus, 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 creatures that were once believed in disappeared because they were not believed in. Plus, plus, plus. Sounds reasonable. People can only believe in so many things. Plus, 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 it follows that if a major focus of belief is removed, there will be spare belief. Plus, plus, plus."
Ridcully stared at the words.
"You mean there's spare belief sloshing around, and these little devils are taking advantage of it?
Plus, plus, plus,
this is possible.
Plus, plus, plus.
All right. So what are people not believing in all of a sudden? Plus, 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 out of cheese, error. Plus, 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 melon, melon, melon. Plus, 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 redo from start. Plus, plus, plus. Thank you. A simple I don't know would have been sufficient."
"One of the major gods?" said the chair.
"Ha! We'd soon know about it if one of those vanished."
"It's Hogswatch," said the Dean. "I suppose the Hogfather is around, is he?"
"You believe in him?"
"Well, he's for kids, isn't he? They all believe in him. I certainly did. It wouldn't be Hogswatch when I was a kid without a pillowcase hanging by the fire."
"A whole pillowcase?"
said the senior wrangler sharply.
"Yes. What of it?"
"In my family, we just hung up very small socks, a sugar pig, a toy soldier, a couple of oranges, and that was it. Turns out people with pillowcases were cornering the market, eh?"
"I can't help it if my family had money."
"And big pillowcases."
"Shut up squabbling, both of you," said Ridcully. "It's Hogswatch. It's not the time for silly arguments."
"Oh, yes it is," said the chair glumly. "It's exactly the time for silly arguments in our family."
"And the sulks," said Ponder.
"Oh, yes, the sulks. Not a
proper hog's watch without everyone sitting staring at different walls. And don't forget the presents. You spend a fortune on other people, and what you get when all the paper is cleared away is one slipper that's the wrong colour and a book about earwax. Ridcully stood in horrified amazement.
Oh, dear, he said. Perhaps there isn't a hog father if you chaps all sit around with long faces. He's not the sort to let people go around being miserable.
Ridcully, said the senior wrangler wearily. He's just some old winter god. He's not the cheerful fairy or anything.
What cheerful fairy?
It's just something my granny used to go on about if it was a wet afternoon and we were getting on her nerves. She'd say, I'll call the cheerful fairy.
He stopped, looking guilty. The Arch-Chancellor held a hand to his ear in a theatrical gesture.
Thank you, Senior Wrangler. Someone tinkled?
Oh, no. No! No, no!
They listened for a moment. We might have got away with it, said Ponder.
Hello! Hello!
They turned. The cheerful fairy was quite short and plump in a tweed skirt and shoes so sensible they could do their own tax returns. The tiny gauze wings just visible on her back were probably just for show, but the wizards kept on staring at her shoulder.
Hello, she said again. You're rather big boys, but it's my job to chase those blues away, so chins up, everyone, and let's see a lot of bright, shining faces.
Excuse me, madam, but is that a chicken on your shoulder?
It's the bluebird of happiness.
But it is a chicken. It just went cluck.
It is blue.
Well, that at least is true.
The cheerful fairy coughed nervously and fiddled with the buttons on her sensible woolly jumper.
How about a nice game or a painting competition?
Madam, we're wizards, said the senior wrangler. We don't do cheerful.
Charades, then. Or how about a sing-song? Who knows, row, row, row your boat? We don't want to be Mr. Grumpy, do we?
Yes.
The cheerful fairy sagged.
It's all going wrong again, isn't it?
She tugged out a balled-up handkerchief from her shapeless sleeves and dabbed at her eyes.
I really do try, but no one ever wants to be cheerful these days.
She blew her nose loudly. Even the senior wrangler had the grace to look embarrassed.
Would you like to borrow my handkerchief? It's nearly fresh. Mr. Stibbons, said Ridcully, would you be so kind as to step over here for a moment?
He beckoned him close.
There's going to be a lot of belief sloshing around to let her be created. She's a good 14 stone, if I'm any judge. Now, if we wanted to contact the Hogfather, how would we go about it? Let her up chimney?
Yes, but not tonight, sir. He'll be out delivering. Blast. Of course, he might not have come here yet. Why should he come here?
What's that? Said Bilious. There's no blade, it's just a sword hilt.
It can cut the soul from the body. Susan stepped out of the light and her wrist moved. A sparkling blue line flashed in the air, outlining for a moment an edge too thin to be seen. She fished the black scabbard out of the umbrella stand. It never rained here, yet Death had an umbrella stand, and a pair of silver-backed hairbrushes by his bed. Susan sheathed the sword.
Where are we going, exactly?
Somewhere I've seen before, recently. They walked out to the stable yard. Binky was waiting.
Come on, then.
Susan pulled him up behind her. Just hang on. And then... I mean somewhere differently.
I'm sorry?
Around the waist, please. Susan took out Violet's hourglass. There was a lot of sand left to run, but she couldn't be certain that was a good sign. All she could be certain of was that the Horse of Death could go anywhere.
The librarian pulled the blankets over himself and curled up.
As an orangutan, he didn't like the cold of winter at all, but as a librarian, he refused to allow fires in the library. As a result, pillows and blankets went missing everywhere in the university and ended up in a cocoon in the reference section. He turned over, wrapped in the bursar's curtains. There was a creaking outside his nest and some whispering.
"He goes to bed early on Hog's Watch Eve, sir."
There was some rustling.
"We're in luck. It hasn't been filled. He puts it up every year?"
"Apparently."
"Do they do it in the jungle, do you think?" "I don't imagine so, sir. No chimneys."
"Well, we might as well make ourselves comfortable, Mr. Stibbons."
"Yes, sir."
A match flared in the darkness as Ridcully lit his pipe. The Unkh-Morpork Wassailers, organiser Mrs. Anaglypta Huggs, were halfway down Park Lane. People had come to their doors to listen. Orange lights spilled onto the snow. Candle lanterns glowed. If you could have taken the lid off the scene, there would have been an interesting biscuit assortment inside. Then, around the corner, slipping and sliding on the ice, came another band of singers. The Wassailers stopped and watched them in horror. In front was Arnold Sideways, a legless man on a small wheeled trolley who was banging two saucepans together. Pushing him along was Coffin Henry. He was accompanied by a perfectly ordinary-looking man in torn, dirty clothing, whose pleasant tenor was drowned by the quacking of a duck on his head. And finally, towed along by a small grey dog on a string, was foul old Ron, the deranged beggar, who was attempting to swear in time to the beat. They were making their din in the hope that people would give them money to stop. But the nearby doors slammed, and the other Wassailers fled. So the beggars stopped singing, all except for Arnold Sideways, who tended to live in his own small world. Then the change in the air penetrated even his consciousness. Snow thumped off the trees. There was a whirl of flakes, and things rained down on the snow. Carefully, Arnold Sideways picked up a sugar pig and bit its nose off. The duck man opened a bag of sweets.
"Ah! Humbugs!"
Coffin Henry unlooped a string of sausages from around his neck. Foul old Ron peered suspiciously into a cracker that had bounced off his hat.
"It's a cracker,"
said the dog.
"Bugger it! My word,"
said the duck man, fishing in a snowdrift.
"Here's a whole roast pig, and a dish of roast potatoes, and caviar in the jar! Asparagus! Potted shrimps! My goodness! How come we got all this?
Shog's Watch, right?
Yeah, but who hung up their stocking?
We haven't got any. I hung up an old boot.
Does that count?"
"Dunno. Ron ate it."
High over the city, Albert turned to Death.
"You didn't get that stuff out of the sack, not cigars and peaches in brandy."
Death seemed to be trying to avoid his gaze.
"Couple of chimneys ago, we were over that big posh restaurant. You were down there a bit longer than usual."
"They were just lying about."
"In a kitchen?"
Albert pointed a trembling finger.
"You nicked someone's Hog's Watch dinner, master."
"It wasn't stealing. It was redistribution."
There were swirls. Binky galloped easily through them, except that he didn't seem to move. Then the swirls vanished. There was greenery below. And that was odd. Susan had flown over countryside, but there had never been a green as this. But everyone knew grass was green, in the same way they knew the sky was blue. She looked up, and there was the sky. It was indeed blue, and down there was the land, and it was green. And in between was nothing. Not white space, not black night, just nothing. And there was the sun, under the sky. And it was yellow, buttercup yellow. Binky landed on the grass beside the vivid blue of a river, and now As she slid off the horse's back, she knew where she was. "This is a child's painting," she said. "Come on. Let's find the house." "What house?" "There'll be a house. There's always a house." Susan pulled him along. "Look, have you ever seen a tree like that? A big green blob on a brown stick, like a lollipop? And there were flowers, each with a couple of leaves dotted around the rolling green. And there, by a bend in the river, was the house. It didn't look very big. There were four windows and a door. Corkscrew smoke curled out of the chimney. In the country of the sky on top, medium Dave Lillywhite hauled another bag of money down the stairs.
"There must be thousands here," said Chickenwire.
"Hundreds of thousands."
"What's all this stuff?"
said Cat's Eye, opening a box.
"It's just paper."
"Title deeds. They're better than money."
"The Tooth Fairy owns property?"
"Got to raise money somehow. All those half dollars."
"Ah, gentlemen."
They turned. Tea Time was in the doorway. Banjo was standing behind him.
"So, you opened the strong boxes."
"Well,
fine, fine. I didn't ask you to, but fine.
In fact, I really have no use for the money. It's small change. You may share it out amongst yourselves, and no doubt you'll squabble and double-cross one another tiresomely." He kicked the sack. It split. Silver and copper fell in an expensive trickle. "And you'll swagger and spend it on drink and women? The thought of investment will never cross your scarred little minds." There was a rumble from Banjo. Tea Time waited patiently until the huge man had assembled a sentence.
"I got a piggy bank."
"And what would you do with $1 million, Banjo?" Banjo's face twisted up.
Bigger piggy bank."
"Well done! Now let's go and see how our wizard is getting on, shall we?" He walked out of the room, followed by Banjo. Then Chickenwire said,
"Was he saying we could take the money and go?
Don't be bloody stupid, we wouldn't get 10 yards.
"Then let's just leave the stuff and go. And what'll you do when he comes after you? He can't look everywhere."
Medium Dave shook his head. If Tea Time wanted to find you, he'd look in only one place. The place where you were hiding.
"If it wasn't for Banjo, we could gang up on him," said Cat's Eye. "Gang up on him?" "Yeah, it's all your fault. Oh, yeah."
Chickenwire backed away.
"I want to go home."
Medium Dave hesitated. This wasn't normal talk for Chickenwire, who was as cool as anyone. This was a strange place, no lie about that.
"What's up with you?" he said. "You're acting like little kids."
"I'm waiting for the Hogfather," thought Ponder Stibbons. "Me, a believer in natural philosophy." From the darkness, Ridcully said,
How long do you think?"
"It's generally believed that all deliveries are completed before midnight."
"Would he deliver to apes earlier than humans?"
"Interesting point, sir. Possibly you're referring to my bold hypothesis that humans may have in fact descended from apes."
"No, I just thought he might deliver alphabetically."
There was a patter of soot in the cold fireplace.
"That's presumably him now."
The two wizards stood quietly in the darkness while the figure landed in the ashes. There was a rustle of paper.
"Let me see now."
Ridcully's pipe fell out of his mouth.
"Who the hell are you?" he said. "Mr. Stibbons, light a candle."
Death backed away.
"I'm the Hogfather. Ho, ho, ho."
"No, you're not."
"I am."
"You look extremely thin in the face."
"It's all this sherry. I'm a bit ill."
"Terminally, I should say."
Ridcully grabbed the beard. There was a twang as the string gave way.
"Why, you," he said. "What happened to the other fella?"
"Well, I suppose I must tell you."
Sidney almost swallowed his tongue when tea time appeared beside him.
"Are we making progress?"
We've worked out one lock.
Light gleamed off tea time's eye.
"There are seven."
"Yes, but they're half magic, half real, and half not there. I mean, parts of them don't exist all the time."
Mr. Brown laid down his pick.
"It's no good, mister. I can't even get a purchase with a crowbar."
"I was told you were the best, that you could open any lock anyone ever made."
"Made by humans? You never said anything about magic."
"That's a shame. Then really, I have no more need of your services. You may as well go."
"I won't be sorry."
Mr. Brown started putting things back into his tool bag.
"What about me money?"
"Do I owe you any?"
"I came with you. I should get something."
"Yes, you should get what you deserve. Banjo." Banjo lumbered forward. Mr. Brown's hand came out of the bag, flourishing a crowbar.
"You must think I was born yesterday, you slimy little bugger. Well, I'm leaving right now, Mr. Teacup."
"I repeat, it's Tia Time. Now, please, Banjo." Banjo reached down and lifted Mr. Brown up by the crowbar.
"Do you like apples?"
Brown struggled.
"You got to say yes."
"Yes."
"Do you like pears?"
"Yes."
"Do you like falling down the stairs?"
Medium Dave glared at the gang. "This place is getting to you, right? But we've been in bad places before."
"Not this bad,"
said Chicken Wire.
"It gives me the creeps." "Chick's a little baby, nya 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 nya,"
sang Cat's Eye. They looked at him. He coughed nervously. "Sorry, don't know why I said that. If we stick together..."
"Eeny, meeny, miny, mo."
"What?" Sorry, what I'm trying to say..."
"Peachy keeps making faces at me." "I didn't." "Liar, liar, pants on fire."
At this point, Peachy screamed. A small wisp of smoke was rising from his trousers. He hopped around, beating desperately at himself.
"Who did that? No one was near him. Now he's sucking his thumb. Nya, nya, crying for mummy."
Then someone screamed high above. It stopped and was replaced by thumping and a sound like a coconut being bounced on a stone floor. Medium Dave got to the door, just in time to see the body of Mr. Brown, the locksmith, tumble past. He looked up. On the opposite side of the huge shaft, Banjo was watching him. Peachy looked up too. It was funny he hadn't noticed them before. The white tower had seemed to glow from within, but now there were shadows moving across the stone. In the stone. Susan turned the doorknob. She heard Bilious gasp, but she was used to the idea of buildings that were bigger on the inside. The second thing the eye was drawn to were the staircases. Susan's eye went back to the first thing, a large conical heap in the middle of the floor. It was white. It glistened.
"Teeth,"
she said. "I think I'm going to throw up." The heap was very horrible indeed. They were small teeth, children's teeth. There are so many. At least 20 million, given the size of the average milk tooth. Whoever had piled them up had presumably been the one who'd drawn the chalk marks around the obscene heap. Susan stared down at the circle. There were a few symbols scrawled around it.
"Oh, no," she breathed. "Surely no one would try to..."
Voices high above her made her look up. She saw a head look over the stair rail and then draw back again. Then a body rolled down the stairs. It tumbled across the white marble and slid to a boneless halt. As Susan hurried towards it, it faded away, leaving nothing behind but a smear of blood.
Chicken Wire reached the top of the stairs, panting.
"There's people down there, Mr. Tea Time."
"Tea Time. Do away with them."
"One of them's a girl, sir."
"Then do away with them politely."
"Yes, right."
As Chicken Wire hurried down the stairs, he thought he heard a creak, as of an ancient wooden door. He went pale. He hadn't heard that creak for 30 years. He started to take the stairs four at a time. In the hollows and corners, the shadows grew darker. Susan ran up a flight of stairs, dragging the O-God behind her. "Do you know what they've been doing?" she said. "You know why they've got all those teeth in a circle? The power! Oh, my!" When Chicken Wire reached the bottom of the tower, he was trembling. He headed straight for the door until Medium Dave grabbed him.
"Let me out! It's after me!"
Dave slapped him across the face. "Pull yourself together! Nothing's chasing you!" Chicken Wire looked back up the stairs. There was nothing there. "Good. Now, what happened?"
"Go on, laugh. I thought it was the wardrobe."
"What wardrobe?"
"When I was a kid, we had this big wardrobe. On the door there was this sort of face. And in the night... Yes, it whispered things."
They mentally shook themselves, as people do when their minds emerge back into the light.
"It's like me in the dark,"
said Cat's Eye.
"You ain't afraid of the dark," said Medium Dave. "That's how you got your name."
"It ain't like the dark we used to have in the cellar."
"Our mum used to wallop us if we went down the cellar," said Medium Dave. "She had her still down there."
He squinted upwards.
"Who's that moving up there? Look, split up. Take a stairway."
"Who are they? Why are they here?"
"Why are we here?" said Peachy.
He started and looked behind him.
Did you hear that noise?"
"What noise?"
"A sort of slipping, snipping."
"No.
You must have imagined it."
Peachy nodded miserably. As he walked up the stairs, little shadows raced through the stone and followed his feet. "I think they saw us." Susan darted off the stairs and dragged Bilious along a corridor lined with white doors. She pushed one open. Down the middle of the room was something like a display case, its lid open. Bits of card littered the floor. She picked one up. "Thomas Ague, aged 4, 9 Castle View, Stolat."
"So now we know where the teeth were. They must have carried them downstairs."
"What for?" "It's old magic. If you've got a piece of someone's hair, or a nail clipping, or a tooth, you can control them." The O-God tried to focus. "That heaps controlling millions of children?" "Yes. Adults too, by now. And you could make them think things and do things?"
"Yes."
Cat's Eye peered down the passage. He heard voices coming from a doorway. Humans he could deal with. As he approached, a sound made him look round. Shadows were racing down the passage behind him. They cascaded down the walls and flowed over the ceiling. Where shadows met, they became darker and darker, and rose and leapt.
"What was that?"
said Susan.
"Sounded like a scream."
There was no one outside, but there was a pair of boots in the corridor. Susan sniffed. The air tasted of rats and damp and mould. "Let's get out of here," she said.
"How are we going to find this Violet?"
"I don't know. I should be able to sense her, but I can't." She stopped. When she spoke again, her voice had a different tone.
"This is a children's place. The rules are what children believe."
"That's a relief. You think so?"
"I think it's going to be very odd. I
don't think it's possible to die here. That man on the stairs looked pretty dead to me. Oh, you die, but not here. You go somewhere else, away. That's about all you understand when you're three. They heard men shouting some way off, so they slipped out onto the stairs again and managed another flight. There were more rooms here. In the first, another cabinet had been broken open.
Hello?
The voice came from the next room. There, tied to the leg of a display case, was Violet. She looked up in bewilderment.
Aren't you?
Yes. We see each other in beers sometimes.
Who's he?
The O-God tried to push his lank hair into place. Oh, he's a god. His name's Bilious. Do you drink? Said the O-God.
No,
said Violet. Not at all?
Never.
After a moment, Susan felt forced to wave a hand across their locked gaze. Can we get on? Who brought you here, Violet?
I don't know. I was doing the collection as usual, and I heard someone following me, and then it all went dark. And when I came to, the big one was carrying me, the one they call Banjo. He's not bad, just a bit slow. The others are thugs. Oh. And watch out for the one with the glass eye called Tea Time. They're all afraid of him.
I think we should get her out of here, said Bilious. Good idea. Let's go. Cat's Eye's boots had snapped their laces. It was as if he'd been pulled upwards so fast they simply couldn't keep up. That worried Medium Dave. So did the lingering odour of mushrooms. This whole business was getting on his nerves. He drew his sword. Above him, the creeping shadows moved. Susan edged up to the entrance to the stairways and peered around into the point of a crossbow. Now, step out, all of you, where I can see you, said Peachy. And don't touch that sword, lady. You don't own this place. No, but I own this crossbow. So, just walk ahead of me, and we'll go and see Mr. Tea Time. When something happens, said Susan out of the corner of her mouth, you two get downstairs. The horse will take you out of here. If? When? Susan saw something move on the stairs. For a moment, she thought she saw several flashes like metal blades catching the light. Then she heard a gasp behind her. Peachy was standing very still and staring at the opposite stairs. Oh, no. What is it? Oh, no, it's the Scissor Man. Who? Said Bilious. No one, Peachy tried to pull himself together. There's no such thing as the Scissor Man, all right? When you were little, did you suck your thumb? Said Susan. Shut up! I'm grown up! I can open beer bottles with other people's teeth and... Oh, gods! The snip-snip sounded very close now. Peachy had his eyes shut. Is there anything behind me? Susan waved the others frantically towards the bottom of the stairs. No, she said, as they hurried away. Is there anything on the stairs at all? No. Right. If you see that one-eyed bastard, tell him he can keep the money. Peachy turned and ran. When Susan turned to go up the stairs, the Scissor Man was there. Its long silver neck curved, and a head made of shears stared down at her. You're not looking for me, Susan said. You're not my nightmare. The blades tilted this way and that. The Scissor Man was trying to think. Then the creature lowered its head, stepped carefully around her, and clanked on down the stairs after Peachy. Susan ran on towards the top of the tower.